Good morning. This meeting of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is being recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, May 20th, 2025. Dr. Bastillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
Welcome to everyone who's here, especially those from Brookline College. I'd like to call the May 20th, 2025 Arizona Board of Physical Therapy meeting to order.
Dr. Bastillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Dr. King?
Here.
And board staff, Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Dr. Sinish?
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius. All are present, and do we have a mission statement reader?
We do.
Okay.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to take a moment to read the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy mission statement. The mission of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence in testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees.
Thank you, Dr. King. Dr. Bastillo, the meeting is yours.
Okay, we will go on to review of the minutes of the April 22nd, 2025 meeting. We can take them as a group with regular session, executive session A and executive session B. Are there any corrections or?
This is Mr. Barton. I have reviewed the minutes and I move that we approve them as they are written.
Second.
Any other discussion?
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of the regular session and executive sessions A and B meeting minutes from the April 22nd, 2025 board meeting. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. And we will move on to 4B, physical therapist applicants, review consideration and possible action regarding educational equivalence and requiring a supervised clinical practice period and eligibility for MPTE and AZ law exams. And our person is Ragni Kumari.
Yes, and I believe Ms. Kumari is on the call.
Mm-hmm.
She provided for your review was the application from Ragni Kumari, a foreign educated physical therapist who graduated from a program that is not U.S. accredited by the Commission on Accreditation of Physical Therapy Education. Ms. Kumar's foreign education was found to be substantially equivalent through educational credentialing. So the board is requested to review the credential evaluation in light of the requirements of ARS 32-2022E3, AAC R424203A, and R424101-12. The board is requested to make the following determinations, whether according to board rule, whether this applicant's education is substantially equivalent to that of a U.S. educated graduate. If the education is found to be substantial equivalent, the board may determine her ability to sit for the NPTE and the jurisprudence exam and whether to license her or to require a supervised clinical practice period.
Great. Thank you.
I just had a quick question because I feel like the last several of these that we've seen, the board exam and the jurisprudence was already taken. So in this case, if we were approving, is it approving to take the exam and the log exam, and then they would do a supervised clinical practice after they pass that, correct?
Correct. Those. So you're going to see some of those circumstances, not typically with the jurisprudence exam with foreign educated. You might see it with other types of applications before you, but foreign educated applicants require board approval because it's not CAPTI accredited schools. So they require board approval to test. Some of the recent applicants through the foreign educated application have come to you who have taken the NPTE previously in a different state. So yep. In this case, yes, Ms. Kumar is looking to take both exams. If the board decides to require a supervised clinical practice period, she would have to pass the exams first and then go on her supervised clinical practice period, as long as her education, the board confirms that the education is substantially equivalent.
Perfect. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I am saying it right if I'm making a motion. So, mm-hmm. Which I'm happy to make a motion. I would move to approve Ms. Kumari to sit for the board exam and the jurisprudence exam, and pending passing of those exams, complete a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours.
Second.
And does that also mean that you're determining then that her education is substantially equivalent?
Yes, I say that her education is equivalent.
Okay. Perfect.
Any other discussion?
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve Ragni Kumari's education as substantially equivalent, allow her to sit for the NPTE and AZ Law Jurisprudence exam, and to require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
And Dr. King?
Yes.
I should also say that supervised clinical practice period, those 500 hours per rule, quoted earlier, will be completed in 6 months.
Yes.
Okay. That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you, Ms. Kumari.
Thank you. Have a good day ahead.
You too. All right. We are going to move on to the consent agenda, which includes Weston Vannoy, Lisa Lombard, Michael Smelzer, and Robert Palmer. Is there anyone that anyone would like to pull off the consent? We have a motion.
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Any other discussion?
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda, items 5B and 5C. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. If any of the people that were on the consent agenda would like to stay, you're welcome to, but we are done with your cases if you would like to leave.
This is Lisa Lombard. Thank you.
Okay, yes.
Thank you very much for approving for me to get back to work. I totally appreciate that.
You're welcome. Okay. We cannot do our informal hearing yet. It's not yet 9:00. I'm wondering if we can reorder the agenda to consider Number 11, old business. Stephen Kempton, is he on the line?
I can't quite tell if he's on the line on a call. I don't see his name in the agenda, or I don't see his name in the list. He was aware of the meeting, though.
Yes. All right.
And possibly for Mr. Kempton's case, we were also going to be joined by Dr. Ryan Bays, his monitor.
Right.
And Ms. Deanne Conroy from Affiliated Monitors. Are either of those on the call as well? They also confirmed their attendance this morning.
Hey, this is Ryan. I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Deanne. Yeah. And okay, I did perfect. See Deanne earlier.
All right. Did Mr. Kempton reply?
He did not reply to the latest email as of this morning, but he was aware of it. What I can do is we can try to reach out to him.
All right. Why don't we move on a little bit then and go to some of the initial reviews then before. And see if he's there. All right, so I do have a script for the initial reviews that I'll go ahead and read for this. This is a time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are two initial reviews and three preliminary reviews for the board to consider. The matters will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I'll provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all the cases that we will hear, and I will not repeat it for each case. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I am the board's chairperson. I'll ask the rest of the board members to introduce themselves, please.
Giovanni Leone, professional member and vice president.
John Height, secretary and professional member.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
Kelly King, physical therapist, professional member.
For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all materials submitted. If at any time it's necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not to take time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior will be removed from the meeting. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to another agency or authority, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. Our first case is case 2509, Michael Moser, PTA.
Let me just check if Mr. Moser, are you present?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is case 2509, and the board reviewed this case at your April meeting, but Mr. Masur was not present, and you wanted you had several questions to ask him. So you voted to continue the matter as an initial review to give him a chance to be at the meeting. So just as a refresher on this case for the review, on his 2024 license renewal application, he answered yes to the question, have you been convicted of, pled guilty, or no contest to, or entered into diversion in lieu of prosecution for any criminal offense in any jurisdiction of the United States or foreign country? And he attached two certificates of completion with his application, but then provided no additional written explanation. So we followed up with that. And per his written statements, he was arrested and charged on December 28th of 22 with a DUI and also interfering with a judicial proceeding, which was failing to comply with the court order. He refused a blood alcohol test and subsequently had his driver's license suspended for 1 year. That was in lieu of blood alcohol testing, according to him. He pled guilty to the DUI on March 26, 2023. And his plea agreement included fines, but there were no other stipulations listed on the plea agreement that was provided by Mr. Masur. He submitted documentation related to an adult home detention that was from about 5 days in April. And the plea agreement stated that the court case is closed. He did not report the charges to the board within the 10-day regulatory requirement. And his response when asked, he stated that he was unaware of the regulatory requirement. His license is active, and he's currently practicing full-time in an outpatient clinic. As such, the board identified the following potential violation, ARS 32-3208, which is the criminal charges mandatory reporting requirement. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Moser, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Does anyone have questions?
Yes, I have a question in terms of, you said you were unaware of such regulation. Did you?
Yes.
Can you explain how you were not aware of the regulation?
It was probably in the jurisprudence exam, which I took several years ago, which I don't remember all of it.
You don't remember all the jurisprudence exam or all the regulations?
All the regulations.
So what have you learned from this process?
That I need to report violations within 10 days.
And anything else?
And that I should not drink and drive.
It looks like you have stopped drinking.
I'm sorry?
You wrote in your statement that you no longer drink.
That's correct.
What did you learn from the DUI aspect?
That it's a danger to the public.
Mr. Mosser, it's Kelly King. I know it can be a little bit unnerving to be sitting in front of the board, but I will tell you that it doesn't sound like that, in what I'm hearing, that there's been much life change. Can you just help us understand how your life has changed personally and professionally as a result of this experience?
Well, Arizona has one of the most extreme DUI laws. So there was a lot of processes that I had to go through in order to get my license back and to return back to normal. So I don't want to have to do that again.
What was the most challenging part of the process for you?
Having to handle my family, work, and everything necessary to close the case.
What can you describe for us a little bit about your support system, the people around you? How do you have anyone that helps hold you accountable to making sure that you said you didn't want to drink anymore and weren't drinking anymore? What's your accountability support system like?
Well, I'm currently separated from my spouse from this whole situation. I have two kids, two daughters, 9 and 14, which they could hold me accountable to.
Have you attended any meetings or joined any groups that sort of work with strategies on things that happen in your life that maybe predispose you to do this again?
Yeah, I was required to undergo a DUI education that I had submitted a certificate of completion.
Mm-hmm. Any ongoing follow-up meetings, things through community or church or anything like that for you?
Church.
Thank you.
It sounds like it's pretty black and white to you. Like you want to just essentially make sure this doesn't happen again. So I kind of understand the very quick responses and everything. I think a bigger concern that I'm hearing out of all of this is that you took the jurisprudence exam a few years ago and you don't remember everything on it. And I know that's not necessarily what this case is about, but I'm just kind of curious, what setting do you work in?
It's an outpatient.
In an outpatient setting? And do you feel Yes. pretty comfortable with the rules and laws as a PTA within that clinic?
Yes.
Okay. I would just, like I said, I understand that's not what this case being presented is about, but I would definitely encourage, if you don't know what the rules are or the laws are anymore, or if you have any misunderstanding of what they are, take some time to go back and review them, because we'd hate to see you back in a board meeting for something having to do with a supervision issue or anything like that. So that's kind of my bigger concern, is just hearing that you don't remember all that.
Yeah, I mean, I would second that, and I think that is a big part of why we're here, is right. I mean, not necessarily that it doesn't know the standards for the treatment, but it is concerning that I forgot is not a valid excuse to not complying with the rules and regulations and statutes that we have, and so that is a little concerning, and I would second what Giovanni said, which is, you need to make sure you're aware of these rules, because if you're not, you're going to be back here and it's not going to be good. So.
Yeah, that is part of your professional responsibility, is to know what you're held accountable to. So definitely we have that information on the board website. I would encourage you to take some time to do a review of those. At least on an annual basis, just so that you can keep up with them.
I agree.
Yeah, and they do change. different laws and different things that are coming to pass through the House and Senate right now and the state, and the rules and laws are changing for physical therapy. So keeping up with that is a positive for all professionals.
Okay, I agree.
Do we have a motion?
I would move to issue an advisory letter just reminding Mr. Mosser about the 10-day requirement to report.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Who did the second?
Two of us did, but me and King.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for the vote?
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded in case 2509, Michael Mosser, PTA, to issue an advisory letter reminding Mr. Mosser of his professional responsibilities to report in accordance with ARS 32-3208. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Haik?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. Good luck to you, Mr. Mosser.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I was just going to tell the board that I do believe Mr. Kempton has joined the meeting.
All right. So let's go ahead and jump to that. It's old business cases 2131 and 2228, Stephen Kempton.
I'm going to turn off my mic and video just since I'm recused from this case.
Thank you.
So at its June 25th, 2024 meeting, the board reviewed Mr. Kempton's compliance with the consent agreement and voted to adjust the frequency of his monitoring reports from monthly to quarterly. The adjustment to quarterly reports occurred earlier than specified in his original executive executed consent agreement. Since June 2024, the board has received three quarterly monitoring reports, September and December of 2024 and March of 2025. Which were provided for your review. Given the change to quarterly monitoring and following the receipt of three reports, the matter is returned to the board for review. It's also anticipated that Mr. Kempton's monitor, Dr. Ryan Bays, is in attendance. And I do believe we've confirmed that earlier. So to ensure that the board had a complete record of Mr. Kempton's compliance to date with the terms of his agreement, a table was provided. And the board's materials also included the compiled memos and attachments from previous board meetings, a standalone file of Mr. Kempton's consent agreement, executed consent agreement with modification letters, and a standalone of chronological meeting memos spanning June 27th of 2023 to June 25th of 2024. So I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any questions about the compliance table that was provided. But other than that, I believe Mr. Kempton is on the call, as well as Dr. Bays.
Okay. Mr. Kempton, are you willing to answer questions?
Yes, I am.
Great. And Dr. Bays, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
And this is Deanne Connery from Affiliated Monitors. I'm online too.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I asked for a review because I was reviewing the quarterly reports, the 11th, 12th, and 13th reports that were given. And we're still seeing, I mean, there's been some tremendous progress made. It looks like the chaperoning is going absolutely wonderfully. There's been some significant improvement in documentation. But there still seems to be some issues with billing, some areas that are being treated that are not assessed. And so these are some of the things that I would like to discuss today and talk about how we can get into compliance or more adherence so that we can keep moving this along. And so I guess my first question really is for Dr. Bays. And, you know, how do you, after you do a report, do you spend time with Mr. Kempton and review it and talk about how you want to progress?
Yeah, the process is that, you know, I submit the paperwork to Dean and then she does the report. Then we go over it together. It gets submitted to you and submitted to Dr. Kempton. He's provided a period to review what's been written and then to reach out to me with any questions that he has, which typically ends in some conversation over the phone between 5 and 15 minutes. The last few reports have been, for the most part, just discussing kind of the same thing, which is, for the most part, billing for unskilled care of federal payers. That's been the primary issue recently. The last report had a few other issues in it, but I think we can likely attribute those to an EMR change that happened between the 12th and the 13th report, where he's definitely getting used to the new EMR. So there were some issues with goals. There was another issue, like you mentioned, where basically, he was doing balance exercises with a patient that was in there for a wrist fracture diagnosis, which it's just unclear whether that was a maybe documented on the wrong patient or what the backstory was on that. I never found that out. But I just know that he was having issues adjusting to the new EMR.
Okay, so I guess in your opinion, after doing these chart reviews, I guess my question is, what percentage of adherence or compliance do you feel Mr. Kempton is achieving?
In terms of billing or in terms of just meeting the standard of care?
We'll do both, please.
Okay. I'd say with the exception of the 13th report, I think all the reports and probably the 3-4 prior to that were pretty clean. So I would say documentation wise, I mean, 90%+ on those 3 previous reports. On this one, this last one, again, the EMR issue, I would say probably closer to 75%. And then billing wise, the billing of everybody besides federal payers is spot on. I don't see any issues with that. It's just with the federal payers. And of those, I would say that as a percentage of which notes look appropriate versus inappropriate, it's probably around 50-50.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions for Dr. Bays?
It's Kelly. Yeah, a question about that, about the 50-50. Can you just walk us through a little bit about how much time you've spent educating Dr. Kempton or Mr. Kempton on the regulations or the requirements for billing for federal payers?
Yeah, I've quoted directly from Medicare, from CMS, on at least 3 occasions where I put it actually into the report so that you can see exactly what the definition of unskilled therapy is. And then we discussed it. And then it wasn't until this last report where we started going over strategies of, you know, well, over the phone, on how to avoid that situation. You know, for the most part, it is if you are changing the exercises, if you are progressing the exercises, if they're consistently taught by you, then they are billable. But in the event that the patient can go over their entire exercise routine with one of your techs without any of your input, at that point in time, those services are no longer skilled, even if you repeat them the visit afterward. But if they're able to safely perform them under the supervision of support staffs, then at that point in time, they are no longer considered skilled in that. So at that point, Dr. Kemp and I had a longer discussion of about 15 to 20 minutes, discussing strategies on how to avoid that scenario altogether.
Thank you.
In terms of those conversations that you're having, do you feel that he's following along and understanding and willing to make changes? Because you've been monitoring him for quite a while.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he's adjusting, or do you feel that there's not learning occurring?
I think there's learning occurring, and I think it's getting better, but it's pretty far from fixed at this point. You know, I think that he mentioned when he was uploading some, he saw issues on the schedule where he was overbilling. And so he was putting in addendums to the billing after uploading the note. So I think that, you know, in hindsight, he's able to be like, okay, yeah, that wasn't legit there. But the thing is, even with that, he's still missing a fair amount of it. So again, you know, we discussed it more in depth after this last report, but it's been an ongoing issue. And I think that's his largest remaining issue.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Bays, this is Mr. Greer. Do you think the current schedule of reports is adequate? Do you think we need to increase reports, or do you think we're to a point where we could back off on the evaluations?
I think right now it's quarterly, correct? So I think
yes.
Quarterly. I'd like to see maybe three clean reports of, you know, sort of in-depth on federal payers and have no errors before I would suggest dropping it any further.
Thank you.
I'm going to, Mr. Kempton, how do you feel like your monitoring's been going, and do you feel that this is an accurate representation of what you're doing?
I feel it is, yes. I feel it is pretty accurate, but it's understanding the things that are being discussed during our quarterly reports. So initially, when he was talking about the Medicare, the government payers, it was about me seeing too many patients at one time with them and the billing, with the patients and the billing. And then so I've corrected that. And so I'm definitely not seeing I'm making sure that I do not overlap any patients at any point in time. And I'm making sure if they do, I do not bill for that. And so this last time it was he talked about in the latter part is billing for units. Even though I was one-on-one with the patient and discussing it with them, he still felt that could have been performed by assistive personnel. And so that wasn't a skilled unit. And so therefore I shouldn't have billed for it. And so it's not that I'm overbilling patients because I'm not spending the time with them and instructing them. It's because they've been doing that exercise. They had done that exercise for more than a few visits, and so he didn't feel that was skilled anymore, and so I couldn't bill for that. And so now we talked about that, okay, so I understand that, and so then that's the strategies he was talking about. It either needs to show progression or do some other exercises or just don't bill for it. And so now I understand that, and so I'm working on that. It's kind of coming across like, he's telling me the exact same thing time and time, and I'm doing the exact same problem over and over again. And that's not the case. It's this different parts of this Medicare billing that we're reviewing and fixing and changing.
Well, there has been some tremendous progress, truthfully, with your note writing and the depth of your evaluations and assessments and plans of care and things like that. So there really has been some really measurable progress, I feel, in that area. Is there anything that you feel is going to help you bump up this billing issue that's going to get these reports cleaner?
Just understanding exactly what, you know, Dr. Bays is wanting and so, and what he's wanting to see. And so after this last time we discussed that, it was very clear, and like he said, we talked about strategies and ideas for being able to correct it. And so I'm very clear on what he was discussing. And so, no, I think we're good.
Okay. Okay.
Go
ahead.
Sorry, I just have a question, Dr. Hampton. It's Kelly King. So listening to what Dr. Bays was saying and what you're saying, I'm wondering, have you thought at all or considered or maybe taken any CEUs or education on your own to take the initiative to better understand Medicare billing for physical therapy services?
I did. Yeah, I did a couple years ago. Uh-huh.
Okay. And it sounds like they might have been helpful, but there's still some issues. So maybe there's been some changes or something. I don't know, but it sounds like there's still some confusion around billing for federal payers.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
No, it can be a different, you know. What I understood in the course is skilled one-on-one time with the patient, being able to instruct them and teach them on correct form, correct technique, to prevent compensating or to have a patient do the exercises correctly. And so that's what I was doing with this patient. And then, you know, Dr. Boyce pointed out, he's like, well, if you got audited, and it would be really hard to be able to defend this if you looked at the exercises and looked at what you're doing, and it would be hard to defend this part because it looks like you just done the same thing. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I'm spending one-on-one time with the patient. I'm instructing them. I'm talking to them about their exercises. And so, you know, that's just a really hard area because I am one-on-one with the patient. I am talking to them about exercises. But it's just, it on paper just doesn't look as good, and it would be hard to defend if Medicare audited me.
Thank you. One other question. So when you noticed, he had mentioned that you had noted, when you were uploading things that there might have been some overcharging or something. Have you ever backed those charges out?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, thank you.
I did. And that was on my EMR, which Dr. Bays pointed out, it is my responsibility, which I completely understand. On my EMR, different patients, different insurances are different colors. And so the Medicare/TRICARE patients are different colors. And so I can make sure and bill them on one-on-one time. And there was one day where a patient, my office staff put in the schedule a different color. And so it looked like it was not a federal payer. And so it was billed differently. And so that's what I thought. And I was like, oh, shoot. And so it was billed differently.
Okay. On that.
And then the balancing that he's talking about, it was ironic, but I had two patients with the exact same first name, and both of them were TRICARE patients. It was crazy. And so one of them was a knee patient. One of them was a wrist patient. And so one day I got those confused, and the documentation was off because of that.
Great. Thank you for explaining that.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? Well, we're not really agendized to do anything other than to listen to the reports. And so I really do appreciate both of you being here and wish you luck, Mr. Kempton, over the next couple of quarters to get this billing handled so that we can continue to move on with this.
Thank you.
All right. So I think it's time now for our informal hearing.
Am I good? Am I, are we good to go?
We are, yeah. I appreciate you being here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. Basile, it looks like Mr. Palmer has raised his hand. I just wanted to address the fact, Mr. Palmer, your case was already heard. I'll be in contact after this meeting. You're welcome to stay and listen to the remainder of the meeting. Otherwise, I'll be in contact with you, and then the meeting audio will all be posted on the board's website within 3 days.
Okay. Thank you very much. I apologize. I had some kid issues this morning, but thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Is Mr. Pullman on the call?
Yes. Good morning, Madam President. This is Sarah Stark. I'm here with Mr. Coleman.
Great. Okay. So, let's see, we'll move to the agenda items for the informal hearing. This is a reminder that the board meeting is being recorded. This is case number 2427, Christopher Coleman, PTA. And we'll have our executive director call roll.
Okay. After I call your name, please introduce yourself and your position on the board. Dr. Bustillo.
Karen Bustillo, PT, professional member, board chair.
Mr. Leone.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, vice president, PTA.
Dr. Hike.
John Hike, secretary, professional member, physical therapy.
Mr. Greer.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Mr. Barton.
Joshua Barton, public member.
Dr. King.
Kelly King, physical therapist, professional member.
And board staff consists of Ms. Richardson.
Board of that.
And Ms. Sinish.
Board investigator.
And Ms. Crowley.
Administrative services officer.
And Ms. Bryant.
Licensing specialist.
And my name is Judy Chaffius. I'm executive director. Dr. Bustillo.
Great. Thank you. We'll have the licensee and counsel introduce themselves, please.
Hi, good morning. This is Sarah Stark. I am counsel for Mr. Coleman.
I'm Chris Coleman. I'm a PTA.
Great. Thank you. Is the complainant on that? That's us. Okay. Okay. This interview is being held pursuant to ARS 322046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board statutes or rules have occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions. Issue a decree of censure. Place restrictions on a licensee's practice. Issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500. Issue other disciplinary actions. Issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violations of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license or certificate, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. If the board finds the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority, the board shall vote on that referral. And then we'll swear in our witnesses.
Dr. Sinish and Mr. Coleman, if you'll raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Mr. Coleman?
I do.
Dr. Sinish?
I do.
Thank you.
And if there is any referring to a patient, we will use initials only. We'll have our investigator give us a brief overview of the complaint.
The board voted to open this case against Christopher Coleman, PTA, at its meeting on December 17, 2024, after review of case 2407. After the initial review for Mr. Coleman on February 25, 2025, the board voted to move this case to an informal hearing with additional investigation. The board requested review of four additional records and also requested information about current scheduling practices at Haven of Green Valley, as well as the audit trail. The supplemental findings were included as Exhibit 13. In the review of the initial records, there was an approximately two-week time frame at the beginning of April of 2024 when Mr. Coleman treated patients at Haven of Green Valley without a supervising PT. During that time, he treated patients without care being delegated to him by a physical therapist. Without a PT providing on-site supervision, a PT should have performed a reevaluation and provided treatment every fourth visit. However, Mr. Coleman treated patients beyond the third visit without a PT doing a reeval and providing the fourth visit treatment. Mr. Coleman was also writing weekly progress notes that were co-signed by PT who was not otherwise involved in the patient's care. In the supplemental records reviewed, there was no evidence that Mr. Coleman provided treatment to those four patients without being under the supervision of a PT, and no evidence that he treated patients without supervision except for the approximately 2 weeks at the beginning of April of 2024. The Haven of Green Valley location now has a full-time PT working on-site who discusses patients and delegates patient care daily to the PTAs. Mr. Coleman is currently working for the same company, but is now the director of rehab at the Phoenix location. He stated that he still sets the patient schedule weekly. However, a supervising PT discusses patients with him and delegates care to him daily. The PTAs no longer write progress notes. PTAs do assist with gathering and entering objective data. However, the PTs write the assessment and update the goals and plan. The audit trail shows the date and time that each provider signed the progress notes. However, according to their compliance officer, their system does not necessarily capture which provider enters each keystroke. Mr. Coleman received a copy of the supplemental investigative report and provided a supplemental response. He took a continuing education course involving supervision and ethics in December 2024 prior to the initial review. He also took two documentation continuing education courses of May of this year, and he provided certificates of completion for your review. Potential violations identified in the investigative report include ARS 32-2044-5, engaging the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession as it relates to standard 3E, physical therapist assistants shall provide physical therapist services under the direction and supervision of a physical therapist and shall communicate with the physical therapist when patient or client status requires modifications to the established plan of care. And ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records as it relates to R424-303 Patient Care Management G1, a physical therapist assistant who provides a selected treatment intervention under general supervision shall document in the patient record the name and license number of the supervising physical therapist, and R424-304 Adequate Patient Record C1 Therapeutic Intervention Notes. For each date that a therapeutic intervention is provided to a patient, the individual who provides the therapeutic intervention shall make an entry that meets the standards in subsection A in the patient record and document the patient's subjective report of current status or response to therapeutic intervention. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Coleman or Ms. Stark, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very brief. So I want to focus this presentation, this brief opening presentation, not on rehashing the potential violations that happened back then. I want to focus on Mr. Coleman's acknowledgement of what went wrong and the issues and how we move forward from here and make sure this doesn't happen again. In my discussions with him, I think we've identified two main issues. And the first one is, how does he accurately track which patients are required to be seen by the PT, right? And I think that was something that was difficult for him with the software that the company has provided, as well as the staffing that he has. He is responsible for basically looking at these spreadsheets and manually identifying, okay, this patient is up for the fourth visit. And I think that's something that he is trying to implement a better system and get, additional administrative staff to come in and try to help him keep track of that. So that's the first issue. The second issue is obviously making sure that there is a PT available through the facility to come in when it's time, right? So, you know, in this particular situation, in that 2-week period, they had lost their PT, right? So that became increasingly challenging. And what he is doing now is obviously he's implemented a list of PRN providers. So if he ever finds himself in that situation again, first of all, he's got the tracking. So he knows, okay, this patient cannot be seen right now without the PT. And then he can, you know, consult with his list of backup providers to ensure this doesn't happen again. You know, as Ms. Sinish, I'm sorry, did I pronounce that right? Sinish, noted, there has been some continuing education taken as well. And so again, I think we want the board to understand that there is acknowledgement of the shortcomings here and that there are steps being taken to identify where we went wrong, how we went wrong, and how to prevent that from happening moving forward. And with all that being said, Mr. Coleman is obviously available for any questions the members may have at this time. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Coleman?
So Mr. Coleman, at your new location that you're managing at this point, just from the information that I'm reading on here, it sounds like each day that you're creating the schedule for the therapists, you're now specifically sitting down with those supervising therapists. And are they dictating which patients the PTAs then can treat moving forward into that next day?
They can. So it's almost like a round table in the morning, that way they can provide exactly what's going on, and we can have that open dialogue with the PT, and it helps for scheduling as well. It definitely helps with progress notes as well. They kind of have, they're able to keep track of the patients and understand what's going on. It's helped immensely.
Okay. And I read somewhere in here that you create the schedule on a Sunday, but is this something, on that Sunday, are you building the schedule then for the entire week, or is this like a daily thing that you're doing with the therapist?
It's daily. The majority of the time is pulling the supervision report on the Sunday, which actually pulls up in Ignite. And that way I can kind of set the schedule Monday through Friday, but I go into the scheduler daily.
Okay. Awesome. And then how many PTs is it that you have at your new location now?
So we have someone Monday through Friday, and then I have other weekend coverage as well.
Okay. And then how many PTAs?
There are two of us.
Two of you? Okay. Thank you.
Along those lines of staffing, do you guys use techs or aides as well?
We do not have a rehab coordinator or tech at this time.
Okay. And about how many patients do you have on a schedule each day for the PT and the two PTAs?
Yeah, so I would say for the PTA, it ranges from about 12 to 16, which would fill out an 8-hour day. And then for the PT, depending on the admissions, they get about 2 or 3 evaluations and then a handful of treats. I would say it's mainly about 4 or 5 treatments. Yeah, it probably ranges. I would say 4 treatments to about 10 for the PT.
Can you tell me a little bit about if one of the PTAs needs to get hold of the PT, what's the opportunity for that PT to see that patient that day?
Yeah, so I would say, are you talking about in terms of bringing them down to the gym or just doing a...
No, if there's a concern, let's say the patient looked really great the day before, but the next day acuity's down, things aren't good, the PTA needs to speak to the PT or have the PT see the patient before they treat them. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think we have a group text in place that helps immensely because the PT's on site. She can actually go by the room herself and actually reassess at that time. It just helps to have someone on site for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Are you still treating at all as a DOR?
I do. I would say I'm covering 8 to 10 visits. It fills out about a 4 to 5 hour day.
So you work for kind of like an overall company that contracts with the facility. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so let's go back to April of 24. Did you, were you working with the company to try to get another PT in there before, so there wouldn't be a gap?
Absolutely. So we knew the contract was ending, and therefore, you know, the regional manager or the area manager was well aware that we needed to hire and bring someone on. And then falling under, you know, general supervision guidelines is basically scrambling to just have someone to either come in as a PRN PT or utilize that general supervision to the best of our abilities. And obviously that created a 2-week gap that, you know, it happened.
What did management say about that?
Yeah, I think the discussion was mainly around getting someone hired and getting someone into the facility as soon as possible.
Was it ever considered to potentially stop treating the patients until you had a PT to see them?
So personally, yes. At the same point in time, the patients that are coming to us would have had that plan of care in place from a PT from a hospital. But yes, it's an oversight. I mean, I don't want to necessarily be treating without supervision. Ms. King, absolutely.
So Haven of Green Valley was not a hospital though, correct?
No, it's a skilled nursing facility.
Okay, so wouldn't you necessarily have to have a new evaluation for the new location being this the skilled nursing facility from that PT? You can't really follow the plan of care from the hospital.
So we did. We had a telehealth PT eval that would have been completed.
Yeah, Karen, I agree that the plan of care from the hospital would have been discontinued with the discharge summary.
Right.
So that plan of care would have been completed. The patient would have required a PT eval before PTA could see them. And I'm wondering, so is the telehealth PT eval you're referring to the one that we've heard from in the past, that the PT that was actually here in the valley that wasn't really aware of who she was seeing?
Correct. So she had been doing the telehealth visits, so she created the new plan of care. And I was doing the majority of those evals via telehealth with her. So, yes, to answer your question, there was a new plan of care in place.
Okay.
So you were taking, like, objective measures as she guided you through what she wanted to know when you say you were helping with it?
Correct. She could do strength tests, sit to stand tests, whatever she wanted to do at eval. Absolutely.
Okay.
I think really what I want to hear is how you used to feel a year ago and how you feel now about care and treatment, and what you've learned.
Yeah, so in terms of treating patients, I mean, I wouldn't be in the industry if I didn't feel as if taking care of people and getting them better was just, you know, absolutely what we want to do. We want to set the goals and get people better and get them home in terms of, or wherever they're going to end up. In terms of what I've learned, yeah, it's, I guess, being subjected to the EMR and whatever is in Ignite, the challenge on a Sunday and scheduling and just manually doing it, it's been a learning curve. But to do it correctly and doing it the right way, continuing education has helped. There's a lot of tips and tricks in terms of setting the schedule the correct way, capturing that fourth visit, so on and so forth. That process, you know, starting back to, I guess, May of 24, is kind of the starting point of the genesis of getting better and just being in that scheduler and realistically not putting anybody in jeopardy, whether it's a PT or a PTA. And even moving up to Phoenix, I've continued that practice to make sure that we're in compliance with the board and the rules and regs.
Okay, thank you.
Can you explain a little bit as far as the system that you have in place now for tracking of that fourth visit, that fourth treatment visit, and making sure that there is a PT available to see the patient on that visit?
Definitely. So there is a report that I can pull, and it's a supervisor report out of Ignite, and I can, that's the one I pull on a Sunday, and that sets the week, and that has helped immensely.
So on that report, what is it, just telling you that the patient is approaching that fourth visit and that a PT right. needs to see them on it?
It shows the number of days, and then it actually tracks 1, 2, 3, and I can, it has a counter. And so that way, when I actually go between the two pages, I can actually see what day that is, whether it falls on a Wednesday or Thursday, and then I can actually set that for the PT.
Got it. Okay. And then during your guys' round table, you assign the PT to those cases and then assign the PTAs to the other patients.
Correct.
As long as the PT feels it's appropriate.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mr. Liani, if I may add, and this is not what is actually in existence, but what ideally would happen with an EHR software is maybe it would alert or flag, you know, that you could set it to like put the patient in red, like alert, fourth visit time. And that, it, to best of my understanding, that doesn't exist in any software. So it's a toggling back and forth, but you know, that would obviously be very helpful if anybody wants to try to get that. Solve design going.
That would be nice.
I mean, and ultimately, it's up to the supervising PT to know when that patient needs to be reevaluated, because the patient isn't the PTA's patient. The patient is the PT's patient. And so the patient should know, the PT should know where that patient is in their process and their progress toward meeting goals. And so it truly is up to the PT. I'm curious too, on the fourth visit, is the PT doing a re-evaluation or
so if it triggers a
progress note?
Yeah, I was going to say, if it triggers a progress note or the re-evaluation at that time, so they're the ones who can finalize and sign off on it. They're the only ones that can do it in Ignite.
Okay. And Giovanni, maybe you can help me. I thought the fourth visit had to be a re-evaluation.
Statute defines it as a reevaluation, but I don't know about what your guys' thoughts are on it, but when I read statute, I look at reevaluation and progress note as kind of one and the same. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like Medicare's definition of a reevaluation and when you would bill for it versus right. not billing for it.
Okay. I guess I would just like to hear, from you, Mr. Coleman, what happens if the PT quits and you've got a day or two and you don't have any PT coverage? What do you do?
Yeah, so I have the phone tree of PRN PTs that can either come into the facility or I'd have to end up myself with general supervision. My other PTA would be able to utilize general supervision. Thank goodness for being in the Valley and there's, you know, the bigger basket of PTs. But then to pull on them and to have them come in and scramble and do that, that's just the daily grind of being a DOR. But at the same point in time, just having that system in place to either have the general supervision or get them on site is very important. But it does happen, and we have that list in place, and that's our backup plan so that we're covered and that the patients can be seen and we can continue the care.
So talk me through a little bit about moving, let's say you're in a situation and now you've got to switch to general supervision. How involved is that PT in understanding the patient that they're supervising you while you treat?
Yeah, so if I have weekend coverage for a PT, I would definitely pull on them first. They're familiar with the building. They're familiar with the patients through the treatments or evaluations. And that's just low-hanging fruit. Those are the easier ones to go to. In terms of expanding outside of that, I would prefer that they come into the facility for sure.
Okay, but let's say they can't. So you've got someone that you've got a PT that says, I'm available to supervise, but it has to be general supervision. Talk me through that process for you, for your patients that day.
Yeah, so I guess I'd have to have them on the phone and be able to, I guess, coordinate with them, but they'd have to understand that it is general supervision. So therefore, we are going to continue to treat as long as it's not outside of that realm of the fourth visit.
Do they have access to the EMR so they can review the patient's chart?
They should. They should have off-site access or remote access via Ignite, or I can grant them that access through our, I guess, IT department.
Are they going into that chart, reviewing it, and just to make sure that everything is where it needs to be for the PTA to treat under general?
Yeah, I would say that that's ideal, that that way they can get in and see who they're seeing or who their general supervision over. That would help immensely. That way they can do a quick chart review. It's fairly easy in Ignite. You can just click on previous daily notes, and you can also pull up the eval right there once you're logged in. So it makes it easier for the PT to do that.
I'm just in terms of thinking of through this and recapping, we have a PTA that filed a complaint originally that was considering everything that was going on, and that PTA no longer works for the company. And now the complaints come through, and it does look like you've made a lot of changes. But in April, you overstepped your boundaries and continued to see patients. And I understand that you were trying to get people, PT to come in for those 2 weeks. The company was, and you were as well. But you also had a retired PT that works there Tuesday through Friday that you didn't consult with. And so my problem with the case is that you overstepped your boundaries, continued to see patients, even though you knew it was wrong, and used telehealth as a possibility. And in this case, you got caught because the PTA filed a complaint. So I'm happy that you've made these changes, but it's very concerning to me that what happened in April happened. Can you describe your thought process in terms of overstepping your boundaries and in the care that you provided? I understand that you have these patients. They're right down the hallway probably from you, but you didn't consult the retired PT, and you were acting as if you were a PT by going to see those patients. Do I have any of that wrong? Because that's what I'm seeing, and that's the part I'm struggling with.
Right. You're referring to the doctor, the physician who's on site as the PT. So,
yes.
So I would say with inside of the time I had started there in Green Valley, we had always had a contract PT. And those 2 weeks, the continuation of care, the thought process for myself personally was to allow for general supervision to take place. There are PTs up in Tucson or Safford or somewhere else that we could have pulled on. We actually ended up, to fill the void was an individual out in Safford. He was only over one PTA. He stepped up. He was able to be that general supervision. That didn't come about until obviously like April 15th. But that whole time, that was the consideration. Who's going to fill in for us? The individual who filed the complaint and I were, putting our heads together to determine who it was going to be. At that time, it was Carly, and Carly was over two PTAs. So we were basically, in a bad spot, and we were totally backpedaling at that point. So the fact that I kept seeing patients, yeah, absolutely out of bounds, and I get that. It's not as if I wasn't trying to find the PT or to get, general supervision at that time. There were others to pull on. Eventually, as a company, we figured it out, and we were able to get that PT to utilize the general supervision. On top of that, I did find a PRN PT to actually come into the facility. She's local to Green Valley. That's, maybe, I believe, in May, but it was just a challenge all around.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question. So as far as the
the PTs who may be supervising by general supervision, is there a process to ensure that they are, I mean, if you've got 16 patients on your caseload, or say you've got 10 and you're the PTA's got 16, and you suddenly find yourself in a space where you've got a PT who's going to need to supervise the two of you by general supervision, that's a lot of charts to review. Is there a process in place to ensure that they aren't, where they are currently practicing, not also supervising other PTAs and techs while they're supervising the two of you?
Yeah, so I'd have to talk to the PT directly and see who they're over at that time. But you're right. Yeah, they would only be able to be over so many PTAs. And then if they were available to then do the general supervision, I would have to provide them with the caseload. They can log in. They can see the caseload for the day for whichever PT, myself or the other full-time employee. But they'd have to be able to get in there, and we'd have to follow the rules and regs. But yeah, the PT would at least have access to those charts.
Thank you. It's Kelly again. I have a question for Liz, if you don't mind. Liz, when you looked at the additional four files, did you find that they met the minimum standard for documentation and supervision?
So, as far as supervision, yes, I didn't see any issues with going beyond the third visit with the PTAs treating under general. As far as the documentation with Mr. Coleman, there are some minor things. He was not documenting his supervising PT when he was working under general, and he doesn't typically document any subjective information in his daily notes. It did seem in the progress notes that the PTs were going in and at least updating the goal status. So I think kind of what Mr. Leone mentioned earlier, it seemed like they were maybe more of a progress note versus a, you know, Medicare reevaluation, but the PT did seem to be going in, updating goal status, updating gait distance, updating assist levels for transfers and bed mobility and that type of thing.
Okay, thanks. So Mr. Coleman, how has your documentation changed since you've taken some documentation CEUs?
Yeah, so Liz brought it up. I mean, the subjective information, putting it in there, it's crucial. I basically put it in at the bottom of every note. The supervising PT, I just copy and paste it out of the notepad, put it into every note. There is a tab in Ignite that you can click on and then put in the supervising PT's name and number.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Mr. Coleman or Ms. Stark, would you like to make a closing statement?
Briefly, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like, again, to highlight the mitigation, the remediation efforts that he's done since last April. And, you know, we hope the board takes that into consideration when they're making the decision today. Thank you.
Thank you. So this concludes the interview and questions process of the hearing. At this time, the board will go into deliberation. We'll ask that there are no more questions or comments by the licensee, counsel, or complainant while deliberating the case. I'm really happy to see that there have been some significant changes and even a change of venue for Mr. Coleman. I think that's probably very positive. I just don't feel that we can overlook 2 weeks of April of 24. I feel that's very egregious to him, to the patients, to the profession, and I don't feel that the work that he's done to date has is adequate.
Especially in this patient population, he described them on the video as uber old and individuals that were very frail, very fragile. And so that's concerning as well.
Yeah, Karen, I agree with you. Took the words out of my mouth as far as egregious goes. This wasn't just a one day. This was two full weeks. And if you're talking that number of patients each day, that's a lot of patients. And I appreciated that he, you know, in his statement, he said that he erred on the side of ethics to take care of the patients. But honestly, was it? Because ethically, you follow the rules. And the rules are made to protect our patients and protect the public. And he chose not to follow those rules. And so we had patients that were seen that weren't seen by a PT. Plans of care weren't updated. There could have been issues and there would have been no one to call or see those patients. And I'm a little uncomfortable with this flipping back and forth between on-site and general, just depending on what the day of the need of the day is, right? Like there's a purpose to on-site supervision and general. And so it feels like that's my backup plan's general. I'll just call a PT, you know, someone that can at least put down and we'll just go on as business as usual. I didn't ask and I should have. What if that session that day was that patient's fourth visit? Would that patient be canceled that day because they're under general supervision and they've already been seen three times? So, you know, I just am not comfortable with the process. And he's a director now. And so leading the entire rehab department for this facility, wherever he's at, PTs, PTAs, all of it, is concerning for me.
And he was the director at Green Valley as well. And so, you know, it was really his decision to move forward and to continue to treat. And I agree with you. Maybe it was care-based, but it was not, it crossed some moral boundaries for me.
I mean, how many cases have we had that the therapist or PTA made the decision, for what they thought was in the patient's best interest, but truly wasn't, you know? So we have rules and regulations for that reason. And I found that they were egregiously violated in that 2-week period.
Yeah.
I'm also concerned, and I know this is not necessarily something we can do about, but I'm concerned about the practice of this company, that they would allow something like that to happen and not immediately stop therapy. In a facility where they were not meeting the rules and regs.
Yeah. If the overall company are not PTs, they're not going to know the rules and regs, or even though they probably should.
Yeah. If you're a therapy company, you should probably know the rules and regs.
Mm-hmm.
On a course,
Go ahead, Mr. Martin.
I think the therapy companies know the rules and regs. I think the problem is, you know, there's not a consequence for them.
Right.
Which, you know, we've discussed before is probably one of the difficulties that we have, but there's nothing we can do about it except for make it very clear to PTs that if you practice in this area and allow them to do this, it's your license. So.
Yep.
Yeah. One of the concerns I have, you know, moving forward, I know Mr. Coleman's not with the Green Valley location anymore, but within the new report, it says that a code has taken over in that director of rehab position. Who's to say that she knows what the rules and laws of PT are and if she's going to be doing things appropriately over there? And as you mentioned, how do you punish an organization? You really can't. As Mr. Barton said, it's kind of up to the PTs to make sure that they stand up for their license on their own. So my hope is that, you know, Mr. Coleman has learned, which it sounds like, you know, from talking with him, he's learned quite a bit from this experience and that he'll, you know, move forward keeping the laws, you know, in mind as he is, you know, working to schedule patients with those PTs. I'm in agreement with you, Dr. King. I don't like the idea of just jumping back and forth between, you know, direct supervision and general supervision. I get that you know, things come up and things happen, but hopefully Mr. Coleman will have, you know, the appropriate plans in place, you know, moving forward to make sure that patients are taken care of the way that they should be.
I share Dr. King's concerns about the practice. However, I do feel that Mr. Coleman kind of understands the rules now. I don't think that was exactly the case last April. But, you know, I don't know what, if anything, we can do to ensure that the practice communicates those rules, communicates the need to follow those rules to its employees. I think this case, it's probably fixed. Mr. Coleman knows that it's his license that's at risk, not the company, and he needs to follow the rules. But I don't know what more we could do to communicate the importance of this to, you know, the corporate entity.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's right. My only, and to be honest, I really struggle with this, but my only question is, do we, and I think this is the only question we have to answer, is how hard do we come down on PTAs that get stuck in this situation because of what their employer is doing, and or PTs, right? And to be honest, it's something I really struggle with, because I get it. I get that, you know, especially in this case, I see what he was trying to do. I see he was working really hard to try to take care of the patients. But he made a mistake. Didn't make the right choice.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I really see your point, Mr. Barton, on that. However, in that April scenario, he was the director of rehab, and that was his decision. He wasn't just the employee coming into work that day to try to get the job done. He knew
responsibility for that.
What was going on.
Yeah, he said he did. He knew what was going on. He took accountability for making those decisions. I'm saying
right. It
wasn't passive. He knew the situation he was in, and he made a decision as a leader to break the rules and to do something outside of the scope of practice.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And so I mean, my inclination is, I think we probably need some kind of a, disciplinary response to that. So that's probably where I am. You know, recognizing, grateful that he's changed. I think there is a lot of mitigating evidence here. But I'm not sure there's enough to just completely walk away from it.
We do need to establish the findings of fact and conclusions of law.
I'm happy to make a motion that we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law as outlined in the investigative report. Are there any that you would like to withhold? I thought they were all appropriate, but so my motion would be to accept all of them.
Second.
Any discussion on that? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
Okay, so just to clarify, what I'm seeing is ARS 32-2044-5, 2044-12, 2044-20. And as it relates to R-424-303
and 304.
304.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And Judy, the 32-2044-12 was as it relates to standard 3E.
Okay. Well, was standard 3. Okay. Okay. In case 2427, Christopher Coleman, PTA, it's been moved and seconded to adopt the allegations and potential violations as set forth in the investigative report as findings of fact and conclusions of law, including ARS 3220445, ARS 3220442, and as it relates to standard E3, and ARS 3220420, and as it relates to AAC R4-24-303 and R4-24-304. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Haik?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Did you have thoughts on a motion, Dr. King?
Well, for discussion, he's taken quite a few CEUs.
He hasn't. He's taken 1 to 2 hours of ethics and one documentation class.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm getting my files mixed up. Certainly CEUs. I'm thinking a time period of probation with required CEUs and I would suggest retaking the jurisprudence exam. The question is monitoring, and that's up for discussion, of course, just to make sure those documentation pieces of documenting supervision and things like that, and the fourth visit and whatnot are occurring. But I think for him, there's a lot left to low, and he's in a director position, and having been in a director position, that's a huge responsibility. And I'm just not. Yeah, so CEUs, I think he needs to have more education and retake our jurisprudence exam. But any other thoughts?
Go ahead.
I'm not, I agree that those things are necessary. I'm kind of leaning towards thinking that the monitoring may not be, I mean, he's in a different situation now. And frankly, it's a situation where he's told us he's got in place as a plan to kind of deal with those potential problems. I'm actually thinking the monitoring may not be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that, so, Mr. Barton. Those are kind of my same thoughts.
Okay.
I'm in agreement with that as well. I think I'm happy with the process that it sounds like he's put in place at his new location. I think he's got everything set up the way that he needs to have it so that he can succeed. I think it's just a matter of making sure that he proceeds with that same mindset. But I think, you know, retaking the jurisprudence exam is going to be a huge thing, making sure that he gets a refresher on what our state statutes are, and that he has a good understanding around that. Plus, you know, the additional continuing education courses should be a huge help. I would probably recommend that some of that continuing education be in supervision specifically. And then as well as, you know, I'd like to see additional documentation courses be taken as well.
I wish there was a CEU on rehab leadership. You know, mm-hmm. or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And maybe there is.
That would be lovely.
Mm-hmm. I think for someone in his role, I think not just knowing how to do it as a PTA, but how to oversee it, train it, and supervise it as the director of the department, as a leader, I think would be great.
Yeah, I would agree that monitoring probably isn't necessary. The CEUs mentioned are good. And I also feel that he really needs a little bit more ethics.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like it to be, you know, somewhat robust, but without being oppressive. You know, I don't think he needs the 12-week follow-up. I don't think he needs, I don't know what courses are available that are a little bit more than just an online 2-hour course.
So let's start there. Let's start with CEUs of, okay, so I'll make a motion and then we can discuss a motion for, 12 months probation Mm-hmm. With an order for CEUs, 3 hours of supervision, 3 hours of ethics, and 3 hours of documentation. And then retaking the jurisprudence exam.
How about a friendly amendment to 6 hours of ethics?
Mm-hmm. Accepted.
And then possible for early termination?
Yes. And of course, CEU is going to be taken online and don't count toward renewal, and they have to be board approved.
Second. Any discussion?
Does it sound reasonable, Giovanni?
I think so. I'm in agreement.
And the motion was a board order, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Are you ready for the vote?
I think so.
Okay. In case 2427, Christopher Coleman, PTA, it's been moved and seconded to issue a board order to include probation for 12 months with the possibility of early termination after successful completion of the following terms. Continuing education, which shall be completed in 12 months, courses must be pre-approved and may be completed online and do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be completed in the areas of supervision for a minimum of 3 hours, documentation for a minimum of 3 hours, and ethics for a minimum of 6 hours. Also, a term of probation is successful passing of the AZ Law jurisprudence examination. That too, of course, to be completed within the 12-month probationary period. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck to you, Mr. Coleman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How about a short break?
Perfect. We need to restart the recording as well. So it's 10:08 right now. What time would you like to return?
I don't know. I'm good with 5 minutes. 10 minutes. John wants 10, so
okay.
10:18.
10:18. You got it. The recording will stop at 10:08, and the board will return at 10:18.